Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour. In the Liberty Hill, Texas, today is June 30, 2014, already the fourth day of the fourth lunar month, 2018. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, A Love Lifted Me. I was sinking deep in sin, far from the peaceful shore. Very deeply stained within, sinking to rise no more. But the master of the sea heard my despairing cry. From the waters lifted me, now safe am I. Love lifted me, love lifted me. When nothing else could help, love lifted me, love lifted me, love lifted me. When nothing else could help, love lifted me. All my heart to Him I give, ever to Him I'll cling. In His blessed presence live, ever His praises sing. Love so mighty and so true merits my soul best song. Faithful love in service to Him belong. Love lifted me, love lifted me. When nothing else should help, love lifted me, love lifted me, love lifted me. When nothing else should help, love lifted me. So in danger, look above, Yahshua completely saved. He will lift you by His love out of the angry way. He's the master of the sea, billows His will obey. He your Savior wants to be saved today. Love lifted me, love lifted me. When nothing else could help, love lifted me, love lifted me, love lifted me. When nothing else could help, love lifted me. Part 3, Judgment and Harvest, we're on page 47. We're going to first refer to a prayer thought taken from Isaiah 24. It says, Behold, the Yahweh maketh the earth empty, and maketh it waste, and turneth it upside down, and scattereth abroad the inhabitants thereof. And it shall be as with the people, so with the priest, as with the servant, so with his master, as with the maid, as so with her mistress, as with the buyer, so with the seller, as with the lender, so with the borrower, as with the taker of usury, so with the giver of usury unto him. It says, the land shall be utterly emptied and utterly spoiled, for the Yahweh hath spoken this word, the earth mourneth and fadeth away, the world languishes and fadeth away. The haughty people of the earth do languish. Now, the earth in prophecy is the United States, and those that Isaiah separates the two. He says, the haughty, the earth mourneth and languishes, fadeth away. And he said, the world languishes and fadeth away. So he first talks about the United States languishes and fadeth away, and then the earth, then the whole world languishes and fadeth away. It says, the haughty people of the earth do languish. Well, we have the haughty people here, which is the Muslims, have come into our land from Africa, if you will. Their leader has come from Africa, Kenya, and he's come into our land, and he has brought his hordes people, of both soldiers and civilian, and he's his whole plan is to take over this whole nation of the United States and give it to his people. And so we're reading the prophecies here about Isaiah talking about this very thing, and when it does happen, what's going on. So in verse 5 of Isaiah 24, it says, "The earth also is defiled under the inhabitants thereof, because they have transgressed the laws, changed the ordinance, broken the everlasting covenant." Okay, now, the United States is set upon the constitutional government. Okay. It's, incidentally, the constitutional government are the far-reaching principles of the law of Moses. And, that's what the old devil, through his agents, have sent them in here for one thing, and that is to destroy this constitution and the influence of the law of Moses here in this land forever, he thinks. Okay, this says, so the earth is defiled under the inhabitants thereof. What inhabitants? The inhabitants of the Muslims. There, because they have transgressed the laws, plural, laws of what? The laws of this great nation, this land. And doing so, that they're indirectly transgressing all of Yahweh's laws, of the laws of Moses, of the sanctuary. They've changed the ordinance. Okay, broken the everlasting covenant. So not only did the Adventists break the everlasting covenant first, but they joined up with the enemy, and now they're all guilty of breaking the everlasting covenant. Therefore hath the curse devoured the earth. And that's why Obama's in here doing what he's doing. There's a curse on this earth, because it's overrun with evil. It's become like Sodom and Gomorrah. There's every evil thing in this country. And now they're opening up the borders and bringing in all of the South American people, the Mexicans and so forth, the Hondurans and all those different nations down there. And they're bringing them all in here, let down our borders, and they're just flooding us now, bringing all kinds of crime, corruption, diseases. And it says, therefore hath the curse devoured the earth, and they that dwell therein are desolate. Therefore the inhabitants of the earth are burned, and few men live. Okay, so this country is going to be destroyed. Okay, Yahweh has reserved a place, though, a hiding place, a place of refuge. He set aside a whole nation for his people, and that's where we're broadcasting from today, the headquarters of this nation. And this nation of Israel, which is the everlasting kingdom of heaven, set up here in Texas for the sole purpose of bringing judgment upon all the inhabitants of the world. Starting right here with the leaders of this country, with Mystery Babylon. The new wine mourneth, the vine languishes, all the merry hearted do sigh. The mirth of Tabris ceases, the noise of them that rejoice endeth, the joy of the harp ceases. They shall not drink wine with a strong, or with a song. Strong drink shall be bitter unto them that drink it. The city of the confusion is broken down. Every house is shut up, that no man may come in. There is a crying for wine in the streets. All joy is darkened. The mirth of the land is gone. And the city is left desolation. And the gate is smitten with the destruction. When thus it shall be in the midst of the land among the people, there shall be as the shaking of an olive tree, and as the gleaning grapes when the vintage is done. It's talking about the harvest of Yahweh's people. They shall lift up their voice, they shall sing for the majesty of the Yahshua. They shall cry aloud from the sea. Wherefore glorify ye the Yahshua in the forest, even the name of the Yahweh Elohim of Israel in the isles of the sea. From the uttermost part of the earth have we heard songs, even glory to the righteous. But I said, my leanness, my leanness, woe unto me. The treacherous dealers have dealt treacherously. Yea, the treacherous dealers have dealt very treacherously. Okay. So who are the treacherous dealers? There are Babylon traffickers or merchandisers that's taken over not only this country, but the whole world. They're your treacherous dealers, Revelation 17. Fear and the pit and the snare are upon thee, O inhabitant of the earth, and it shall come to pass that he who fleeth from the noise of the fear shall fall into the pit, and he that cometh up out of the midst of the pit shall be taken in the snare. For the windows from on high are open, and the foundation of the earth do shake. Now we know that Babylon, Obama and Kanye, and all the leaders of this country have been for many, many years walling out these here caverns in the heart of the earth. They got away from of detecting where these caverns are at, and all over the world through their satellites that they've got roaming around the whole world, and they take pictures. They got heat sensors. They can detect where there's caverns already in the earth, and so they go down in there and they wall them out, and they make military bases out of them and places to live, and they make headquarters for themselves, and then they build highways down there from one city to another and one place to another all over the world. It's a network that they've been working on for, oh my goodness, over 50 years, and they have literally laid them out an underground fortress there. And so it says, Yahweh says he's going to shake the earth. Why? The foundations of the earth are going to shake. And what's going to happen when the foundations of the earth shake? It's going to close those places, it's going to cave those places in and destroy them. For the earth is utterly broken down, the earth is clean dissolved, the earth is moved exceedingly. Okay. The earth shall reel to and fro like a drunkard, and shall be removed like a cottage, and the transgression thereof shall be heavy upon it, and it shall fall and not rise again. And it shall come to pass in that day that the Yahweh shall punish the hosts of the high ones that are on high, and the kings of the earth up on the earth. Okay, so those 10 kings on Revelation 17, that's riding, represented by those 10 horns on that beast, they are the ones, what this is talking about here. The kings of the earth upon the earth. The kings of the United States, that's running our lawmakers, they call them lawmakers, they call them congressmen and senators. They run this country, and the Supreme Court, they're your lawmakers and interpreters. And they shall be gathered together as prisoners are gathered in the pit, and shall be shut up in the prison, and after many days shall they be visited. Then the moon shall be confounded, and the sun ashamed, when the Yahshua, the host, shall reign and mount Zion and in Jerusalem, and before his ancients gloriously. Okay, his ancients are his prophets, are the leaders of his kingdom that have been installed as the leaders of his kingdom, and these 144,000 are part of these ancients. Okay, matter of fact, they're the governing body of this kingdom. They're the prophets, priests, they're the kings and judges. Okay, end of our prayer thought. We're going to go right on into our main study, and it's taken from the Judgment and Harvest Tract of Victor Holland. We're on page 47. This is just a little review from our last study. I said this extension is... actually, let's go... 45, it says, "And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divide his sheep from the goats, and he shall set the sheep on his right hand and the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, these being the second fruits, come ye, blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Then shall he say also unto them on his left hand, depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels." Matthew 25:31, 34, and 41. Okay, so what are we learning? We're learning that when he comes and sits upon his throne to gather the nations before him, that is to gather the second fruits. 144,000 are sitting with him on his throne when he comes to sit and gathers the nations before him and separates them. They're the second fruits. Okay, we'll pick up now where we left off yesterday. We're on page 47. It says, "When the judgment of the dead, however, or with the judgment of the dead, however, the work of separation takes place in the books in the heavenly sanctuary, whereas with the judgment of the living, the separation takes place among the people in the church as well as among their name in the books in the heavenly sanctuary, thus showing that both sanctuaries will finally be cleansed. Inescapably, therefore, the Yeshua's coming to his temple," Malachi 3:1-3, "his coming with all his angels," Matthew 25, "and his coming enthroned above the living creatures," Ezekiel 1. All three representing the same event, as has been shown, take place in the beginning of the judgment of the living, the time in which the judicial activities of the heavenly sanctuary extend onto the earthly sanctuary, the church. "And I looked, and behold, a white cloud," exclaimed John the Revelator, envisaging the same coming of veracity described by the Malachi, Matthew, and Ezekiel, "and upon the cloud one sat like unto the Son of Man, having on his head a golden crown, and in his hand a sharp sickle. And another angel came out of the temple, crying with a loud voice to him that sat on the cloud, thrust in thy sickle, and reap, for the time has come for thee to reap, for the harvest of the earth is ripe. And he that sat on the cloud thrust in his sickle on the earth, and the earth is reaped." Revelation 14:14-16. And this is reaping the first fruits harvest here out of the United States. And that's 144,000. "This coming of the Son of Man is plainly therefore not when the resurrected and the living righteous are called together to meet him in the air. For verse 17:20, following the ones quoted in the paragraph above, reveal that after he came and reaped the earth, another angel having a sharp sickle came and reaped a second harvest before the wrath of the Elohim, the seven last plagues," Revelation 15:1, "was poured out upon the wicked. Thus again, for the fourth time, it is seen that there are two different comings of the Son of Man. The one to sever the wicked from among the just in the church, Malachi 13:49, and then immediately to call the just from among the wicked in the Babylon, Revelation 18:4, the other to take the saints, both the resurrected and the living, to their mansion, which he has prepared for them, 1 Thessalonians 4:16, John 14:1-3. At the former coming of the Son of Man, the stone which smote the great image was cut out without the hands, without the man's aid. And by the Yahshua, this is Yahshua himself, because as the Yahshua said, there was none to help, and I wondered that there was none to uphold. Okay, this goes right along. So he came to Gilead, and he came at Passover, and he says, and I wondered that there was none to uphold. Therefore mine own arm brought salvation unto me. So his own right arm, which was the house of David, which was actually antiquated Elijah. That was his right arm stationed right there at the 11th hour Adventist. Okay. So he says his own right arm. And my fury it upheld me. And I will tread down the people in mine anger and make them drunk in my fury, and I will bring down their strength onto the earth, Isaiah 63:5-6. For the work of the separation or cleansing brought to view in the pillar of Matthew 13:30, and again in that of the Matthew 13:47-49, also in the prophecy of Malachi 3:1-3, and in that of the Ezekiel 9, as well as in the Revelation 14, is directly applicable unto the judgment day for the living. But the cleansing of the sanctuary at the end of the 2300 days, according to the Daniel 8:14 and Daniel 7:9-10, applies directly unto the judgment among the dead. Though the cleansing of the sanctuary has already been seen from the Daniel's prophecies, it was to take place after 1844 A.D., yet since the living righteous are still commingled with the sinners in the church, and since Daniel saw the ancient of the day sit in the judgment, not to slay those who had the mark, but to judge from the books which were open, obviously his vision of the judgment is in the respect unto the dead. As unto the cleansing of the church on the earth, it is to be accomplished first by the casting out of the abomination, second by the restoring of the truth, and third by the taking away the terror. But as unto the cleansing of the sanctuary above, it is now being accomplished by the removing from the book of the life and names of those who are found wanting, then by placing them in the book which contains the names of those who are to come up in the resurrection of the wicked after the 1,000 years, Revelation 20:5. Thereby leaving in the book of the life the names only of those who have gained the victory over the sin and who thus are waiting to come up in the resurrection of the just, Revelation 20:6. John accordingly saw the dead, small and great, stand before the Elohim, and the books were open, and another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged out of those things which were written in the books, according unto their works, Revelation 20:12. Beyond the reasons already adduced, there are still further reasons for both judgments. As the cleansing of the heavenly sanctuary is the work of the cleansing of the books by the blotting from them the names of both the backsliders and the tares, and as at the time of the trouble such as never was since there was a nation, the only ones who shall be delivered are those whose names are found written in the book. For the cleansing of the books, therefore, obviously takes place before the resurrection and before the time of the trouble such as never was. Thus the unfaithful dead will be left in their graves at the first resurrection, and the unfaithful living will be left without deliverance from the coming trouble. But were their names allowed to remain in the books, then according unto the records, either the wicked dead would have to be resurrected with the righteous, and the living wicked delivered with the living righteous, or else both the righteous dead and the righteous living would have to be forsaken with them. All alternatives, both of which are impossible, thus again making mandatory an absolute separation as instant in the type found in the Joshua's time. There is an accused saying, said the Yahweh. There is an accused, not cursed thing. There is an accursed thing, said the Yahshua, in the midst of thee, O Israel. Thou canst not stand before thine enemies until you take away the accursed thing from among you. And Joshua and all Israel with him took Achan and all that he had, and all Israel stoned him. Joshua 7:13, 24, and 25. From this bulwark of the evidence and the proof of the cleansing of the church on the earth and of the books in the heaven towers forth the impregnable truth that the living who continuing faithful unto the end retain their names in the book of the life shall in this time of the separation receive Elohim's mark or seal of the deliverance, while those who do not shall be left without it to perish in their sins, and correspondingly the dead, whose names are retained after judgment in the book of the dead, shall come forth in the first resurrection, Revelation 20, verse 6. While those who were unfaithful in the life wait until after the 1,000 years to come forth with all the wicked in the second resurrection, Revelation 20, verse 5. So while it is necessary in the congregation of the dead to separate the wicked from the righteous, now awaiting the resurrection morning, it is just as necessary in the congregation of the living to separate the wicked from the righteous, now preparing for the deliverance from the coming trouble and awaiting the second coming of Yahshua, his visible coming, to wake the dead saints and to take up both them and the living. There are therefore two separations, one among the righteous dead and the other among the righteous living, the dead being appointed unto the resurrection and the living unto the translation. Those, on the other hand, whose names shall be blotted out of the books are those who shall have failed to put on the wedding garment. Matthew 22:11. At the Master's command, Matthew 22:13, they shall be cast out, never more to be among the wedding guests. For this cleansing of the book of the life is further seen to be necessary in order to enable the angels rightly to select the saints, for when the Son of Man comes with all his angels, he shall send them with the great sound of the trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect, the resurrection from the four winds, from the one end of heaven unto the other, Matthew 24:31, and take them to join the living. The concentrated light now shining forth from the prophecy herein viewed in their correlative connection shows that both the sanctuary in the heaven and the one on the earth were polluted not by the political and military conquest of the heathen powers, but rather first by some of his converts not enduring, Matthew 10:22, second by the Satan's bringing in the terrors while men slept, Matthew 13:25, and third by the exceeding great horns casting out the daily, treading down the truth and bringing in the abomination that maketh desolate, thus involving both the earthly and the heavenly sanctuaries. This is exactly what happened in 2002. And Brother Johnson apostatized. He polluted the sanctuary and he cast the daily down. Said, "Well, next to it, we get the land." Okay, so he brought the abomination that maketh desolate. And what did it do? It made Gilead Center desolate, thus involving both the earthly and the heavenly sanctuary. Gilead Center represented the earthly sanctuary because it had the sanctuary restored unto it completely. And the heavenly sanctuary then went into operation and started the judgment of the living, closed out the judgment of the dead, and that's what brought everything to a close there in 2002. The startling revelation shows conclusively that the cleansing according unto Daniel 8:14 is first of the sanctuary in heaven and second of the sanctuary on earth. And important as it is, any who has failed to make a diligent and careful study of the nature and significance of this great work of the Elohim investigating the guests who have come in for the wedding are simply indifferent unto the prospects of the eternal life, so great a salvation. For when a person's judgment is pending and he is unaware of the fact, he will be unprepared and unable to stand when his case is investigated. This is exactly what's happening. This is what has been happening for since 1970. That's when Ezekiel 9, an investigative judgment, actually started for the house of Esau. And to this all-important subject, therefore we ought to give the more earnest heed, Hebrews 10:1, and in the doing this we must approach the judgment in the light of the parable. For the seed sower, the seed, the field, the season of the cultivation and growing, and the season of the harvest must together be perfectly calculated to illustrate the spiritual kingdom. Otherwise, the representation can only lead into the error instead of into the truth. For the four seasons of the year, all being required in completing the process of the planting, raising, and harvesting the year's crops, and all of them being the beginning of the agriculture year, just as the close of the summer season is the feast of the ingathering, which is in the end of the year, when thou hast gathered in thy labors out of the field, Exodus 23:16. This parable therefore illustrates by the 12 months of the year a period of the gospel history in the closing of which the kingdom of the Yahshua is to be set up, and the beginning of which is a seed sowing time. There have been a period of church history illustrated by this 12-month harvest chart. It's a 12-month harvest period. We must therefore find the time of its beginning, the time of the seed sowing, and the time of its closing, the time of the reaping. He that soweth the good seed, says Yahshua, is the Son of Man, and the enemy that sowed the tares is the devil, Matthew 13:37-39. For the Son of Man, he who soweth the good seed is none other than the Yahshua, as he could not be called the Son of Man before being born of a woman. He accordingly could not have sowed the good seed of the spiritual harvest until after his birth in the Bethlehem of Judea. As his ministry, his sowing of the good seed, the truth, began right after his baptism, Matthew 4:17. Therefore, to establish the beginning of the parabolic harvest period, we must ascertain the date he was baptized. And after 62 weeks, prophesied Daniel concerning Yahshua's ministry and his death, shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week he shall call the sacrifice and the oblation to see, Daniel 9:26-27. That this is in the prophetic time, reckoned by the year day a rule of Ezekiel 4:6, is seen from the fact that there were 7 years from the time Yahshua was baptized until the time the apostles were permitted to take the gospel unto the Gentiles. During this period, Yahshua confirmed or fulfilled the covenant. In the midst of the week, or at the end of the 3.5 years, he was to be crucified, thus causing the earthly sacrifice to cease. The fact having been established, see illustration on page 55, that the 3.5 years of Yahshua's ministry terminated on the 16th day of the first month, then counting 3.5 years follow the illustration on page 55, we find that his baptism took place on the 16th day of the 7th month, which was in the week of the Tabernacles, and the celebration of which was the end of the agricultural year, the close of the harvest, Leviticus 23:39. Thus we see that the parable is in the perfect fidelity unto nature, that the Son of Man commenced sowing the spiritual seed right on the time in the end of the old and in the beginning of the new year's harvest, in precisely the right season of the year, with the sowing of the seed beginning with Yahshua's baptism and the harvest coming at the end of the world. That for the period of the parable obviously embraces of the entire gospel dispensation. In other words, when you say gospel dispensation, you're talking about the 2,000-year period that the new covenant works with the blood of the Yahshua in the heavenly sanctuary, with him administering it through the blood of sprinkling on a day-to-day basis for those that are called by his name and those that come unto him at the appointed times in the sanctuary, for he waits there as a high priest, waiting for his people here on earth to come to him at his appointed times, and then he does the rest for them. So this gospel period has been a 2,000-year period. From the beginning of Yahshua's ministry until the close of probation, the probationary time between the two is the wheat growing time. The 3.5 years from the beginning of the Yahshua's ministry until his crucifixion being the sowing time, and the harvest time being the end of the world, then the intervening period is the time for the growing and ripening of the grain, also the tares sowing time. Upon the finishing his sowing of the good seed, the Son of Man left his house, and he went and gave authority unto his servants and unto every man his work, and commanded the porter to watch. Okay, now the porter today would be antitypical David. Okay, he's the doorkeeper. Okay, Matthew 13:34. But with him gone, men slept as men are given to do when their employer is away. Thus, sometime after Yahshua ascended on the high, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way, Matthew 13:25. But his servant sleeping knew it not. What a tragically ironic picture. Zion's watchman falling asleep on her very walls, while the enemy slips over unseen and unopposed. Oh, what a fearful guilt of the gross dereliction of the duty lies upon the watchman since the apostolic day. Denouncing those today responsible for this failure to protect the church from the fellowshipping virtually anyone who professes an interest and shows a desire to be a fellowship, though such a one neither be grounded in the truth nor bringing forth fruits meet for the repentance. For the spirit of the prophecy declares, too much hasty work is done in adding names to the church roll. Serious defects are seen in the characters of some who join the church. Those who admit them say, we will first get them into the church and then reform them. But this is a mistake. The very first work to be done is the work of the reform. Do not allow them to unite with the Elohim people in the church relationship until they have decided evidences that the spirit of the Elohim is working upon their hearts. Many whose names are registered on the church books are not Christian. Review and Herald, May 21st, 1901. Now, I'd like to make a point here. When I joined Brother Johnson in 1970, if he had vetted me, he'd have found out that I was a beer-drinking Adventist. I was a member of the Adventist Church, but I would go out after church services, and I'd go to a local restaurant, and I would eat and pay for my food and my family, and I would drink beer with my meal. and I'd buy beer and drink at home. I was a good Adventist. Okay? So in when I joined Brother Seppie Johnson, he didn't ask me if I had any bad habits. He was just glad to have me. He didn't question me on anything. But because the Adventists had long since stopped doing that, stopped questioning the people that wanted to join them. And so Brother Johnson just continued on in that same pattern of not questioning anybody when they joined him. He was so used to Adventists doing it as an Adventist and the Davidians doing it as Davidians. With Ben Roden, I'm talking about with Ben Roden from 1955 on, I think V.T. Harder pretty well vetted his people. But I don't know about, I know Ben Roden from then on, Ben Roden and Brother Johnson never vetted their people. They did no different than the Adventists before them. Let us continue. What stronger evidence is needed to convince oneself that the watchmen have lost the spiritual eyesight which John the Baptist and the apostles had? Tragically true indeed, the sharp indictment. Sleeping preachers preaching to a sleeping people. Testimony, Volume 2, page 337. Ironically enough, I had quit smoking during the 60s. I smoked a little bit, and I drank beer and alcohol. But I didn't give up my alcohol. But after I joined Brother Johnson, I gave up my alcohol by just sheer conviction by the Holy Spirit that was wrong to do in the kingdom. And I felt like I had stepped up into the kingdom from the Adventist Church, and so I became personally convicted and quit it on my own. Brother Johnson never approached me about nothing. I wonder if I had any bad habits to give up. Because all the Gilead Center had bad habits from the start go, including Brother Johnson and his wife, and all the members had bad habits. And they weren't required and told that they had to give them up. Or should work on it. Brother Johnson never dealt with them, one of them. Discerning when he saw many of the Pharisees and Sadducees come to his baptism, that they would later crucify his master, John said unto them, O generation of vipers, John said unto them, O generation of vipers, who hath warned you to flee from the wrath to come? Bring forth therefore fruits meet for the repentant. Matthew 3:7-8. Thus he exposed and thwarted the devil's move to bring in the terrors at that time. For well did he know that if the terrors once got in and then he tried to weed them out, he would uproot the wheat with them. Okay? What if Yahshua had rooted out Judas's chariot before that Last Supper? Because all the other 11 disciples had accepted Judas. He might have lost some of his disciples along with that. But when he had the Last Supper and he vetted him out, and he vetted all 12 of them, he put them all up on the same playing field. And he told them all, you're not all clean. There's one of you not clean. He had all 12, all the other 11 examining their hearts to see if they were clean or not. And then during the time of the apostles, Peter, as a faithful watchman of the church, detecting the devil's assaying again to come in with his bad seed, said unto the guilty, Ananias, why has Satan filled thine heart to lie unto the Yahweh Spirit and to keep back part of the price of the land? And Ananias, hearing these words, fell down and gave up the ghost. And great fear came on all them that heard these things. And it was about the space of 3 hours after when his wife came in, and Peter answered unto her, Tell me whether ye sold the land for so much. And he said, Yea, for so much. Then fell down straightway at his feet and yielded up the ghost. Acts 5:3, 5:7, 8, and 10. For the fact that the congregation too has failed to discern the devil's sowing his seed among them twice over vindicates the indictment. Sleeping preachers preaching to a sleeping people, Testimony Volume 2, page 337, and proves that the entire church, both the ministry and the laity, is sound asleep in the fulfillment of the words of Yahshua, Then shall the kingdom of the heaven be likened unto 10 virgins, and five of them were wise, and five were foolish. But while the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. Matthew 25:1-5. For the evil of the lion, the devil, freely to sow the tares among the wheat, have existed in the Christian church since the passing of the apostle, with the result that whenever the Yahweh has sent a message unto his people, the tares amongst them have straightway, at the instructions of the leaders, raised their hands and voted out whoever would listen unto the messenger and obey the message. That's exactly what happened at Kermit. That's exactly what Kermit did. He had all the members come in and tried to get my wife also to vote against me. And my wife and Alan are the only two that didn't vote against me. And they're with me today. Just time and again, telling their birthright for less than a mess of pottage, the professed people of Elohim have lost out, and still the church has never learned the tragic lesson. Well, I say both are with us. Alan DeLong is slipping very badly. He's going to have to really, really do make some strong effort to get back in if there is indeed another opportunity. Oh, you house of Israel, warns Yahweh, let it suffice you of all your abominations, in that ye have brought into my sanctuary strangers, uncircumcised in the heart and uncircumcised in the flesh, to be in my sanctuary, to pollute even my house, Ezekiel 44:6-7. But ever unto the faithful, as the terrors have crowded them out of their midst, Yahweh's comforting assurance has been, blessed are ye when men shall hate you, and when they shall separate you from their company, and shall reproach you, and cast out your name as evil, for the Son of Man's sake. Rejoice you in that day, and leap for the joy, for behold, your reward is great in the heaven, for in the like manner did their fathers unto the prophets, Luke 6:22-23. As the period since the passing of the apostles has been the wheat and the tare growing time, and as moreover the Laodicean church is the last of the seven sections of the apostolic congregations in which are commingled the wheat and the tares. This apostolic congregation is what B.T. Hall has called a Christian church. He calls the Adventists a Christian church. And so he'd be talking to Gilead Center as a Christian church in which are commingled the wheat and the tares. And that's where the judgment first began, to start this separation of the wheat and tares. Was with this Christian church at Kermit, Texas. We must learn the answer to the question, which is the Laodicean church. This is the question now, which is the Laodicean church? So now, the correct way to read this, and it should have been, put the preposition in there, and it gives you a whole different meaning to the question. Which is of the Laodicean church? Is it the shepherd rod? Is it Ben Roden with his new branch movement? Or is it the Gilead Center, the last of the three feeding pastors? Okay? So you'd have to say, with the knowledge we have today, the unrolling of the scroll and inspiration shows us that this is Gilead Center, which is of the Laodicean church, and the Laodicean church was the Adventist church. So they're the third branch of the Laodicean church. Laodicea may be infallibly recognized amidst the many isms of the Christendom by the work she is doing declaring of the judgment indeed, but this mark of the identification is pointed out by the very name Laodicea, compounded of the two Greek words Leo and Dikea, or Dikea, the one meaning people, also speak, the other meaning judgment. So Leo means a people that speak, and the other meaning judgment. The two in one meaning the people declaring judgment. The church, therefore, which declares fear Elohim and give glory unto him for the hour of his judgment is come, Revelation 14:7, is evidently the one called Laodicea. Well, the hour of his judgment had come in 2002 at the Passover. And it was obvious then that's the one that's called Laodicea, Gilead sinner. And the angel of Laodicea is none other but the prophet in charge of the candlestick at the Gilead Center. And it is almost as well known outside Seventh-day Adventist circle as within, that the Seventh-day Adventist Church is endeavoring to carry the judgment message of Revelation 14:7 and is therefore unchallenged in her claim unto the title Laodicea. Okay, so since Brother Johnson was the last of the Seventh-day Adventist connections, feeding pasture, and she was the one that was endeavoring to carry the judgment message of Revelation 14:7. Plainly then, the names of the seven churches represent the successive sections of a Christian church, of which the Laodicea is the last, are not just named. Take as another example the name of the sixth one, Philadelphia. Its meaning, a brotherly love, being a misnomer of the spiritual condition of any other church organization in the entire Christian era, implicitly fits, however, the state of the charity common and singular unto the sixth, the Millerite church, being the one shining example of a church never guilty of thwarting or trying to thwart in any way her members in their exercise of their inalienable right to investigate and to accept for themselves whatever their conscience bid them investigate and accept. Okay, she alone contributed nothing unto the grievous condition calling forth the scripture. Hear the word of Yahweh, ye that tremble at his word, your brethren that hate you, that cast you out for my name's sake, said, let the Yahweh be glorified, but he shall appear unto your joy, and they shall be ashamed. Isaiah 66:5. In the separation of the tares from among the wheat. For the end of the period in which the wheat and the tares are commingled, and the time of the closing work for the Laodicean church, the last of the seven churches, this work is identified by the church's founder as a marking in Ezekiel 9, the sealing of the spiritual Israel 144th house. So apparently then, either the sealing started in 2002 for the 144,000, or they had already been sealed. Okay, apparently, they may have already been sealed. Okay, see Testimonies to Ministers, page 445, and Testimonies, volume 3, page 266, volume 5, page 211. And this identification is conclusively substantiated by the fact, as herein seen, that Ezekiel's prophecy is a separation of the two classes. Those who sigh and cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst of the church, and those who do not. And as the former are delivered, while the latter fall under the slaughter, weapons of the angels, there is clearly seen a complete separation of the tares from among the wheat in the time of the harvest. So this kind of is the way it worked all through the Adventist world. Those that were signed a crime against the abominations in 1888, that joined Jones and Wagner, Righteous by Faith, and Ellen G. White, continued on with her, they're the ones that were delivered. And those that signed them at the General Conference, they were cut off. Their names were taken out of the Lamb's Book of Law. Same thing in 1930. Those that followed V.T. Hollis into the rod, they were delivered. Those that didn't, their names were cut off. So all the Adventists that rejected the shepherd's rod and Leaky Hollis in 1930 were cut off. Their names were taken out of the Lamb's Book of Life. Pretty scary when you think about it. And then in 1970, those that rejected Vertus W. Johnson, at the end of the rod period, they were cut off. All of those. And Vertus Johnson went to the headquarters in Carolina to see Donnie Adair in about 1972. And boy, I mean, he and all the leader, the Davidian leaders down there rose up against Vertus Johnson when he let him speak at their meeting. So they were all cut off, and I met Donnie Adair in person after that here in Texas. And I told him because of his blaspheming against Yahweh's prophet, Vertus Johnson, that he would not enter into the land of Israel. But his probation was closed. I told him that when I took him to the airport and delivered him at the airport to send him back home. I told him, you're not entering into the land of Israel when the time comes for that to happen. Let's go on. Time of the harvest. Though the true meaning and the time of the harvest is greatly confused by some and confusing to many, a close study of the word will clear it in just a simple manner as it cleared both the time of the seed sowing and the period of the wheat and the tares. Now, when 2002 came and the end of Gilead Center, Willis Johnson pulled the same thing that all of his predecessors pulled before him. They rejected the next message that was sent to them to save them. In other words, to get their filthy garments removed and get the clean garments on, Gilead Center rejected the last message for the Adventist Church as a whole, closing out 158 years of legacy for the Adventist Church and the judgment of the dead. Okay, well, actually, this we're close to the end of our study. Let's just bring the study to a close now. We'll close with a song. I love to tell the story. I love to tell the story of unseen things above, of Joshua and his glory, of Joshua and his love. Love to tell the story, because I know it is true. It satisfies my longing, there's nothing else can do. I love to tell the story, 'twill be my theme in glory, to tell the old story of Joshua and his love. I love to tell the story, his pleasant to repeat. But since each time I tell it, oh, how wonderfully sweet. I love to tell the story, for some have never heard the message of salvation, God's unholy word. I love to tell the story, 'twill be my theme in glory, to tell the old story of Yeshua and his love. I love to tell the story for those who know it best. Seems hungering and thirsting to hear it like the rest. And when it sings of glory, I sing the new song will be the old, old story that I have loved so long. I love to tell the story, will be my theme in glory to tell the old, old story of Yahshua and his love.